Today is Friday, July 11th, 2025, and you are listening to the World Socialist website. Sabotage of Philadelphia Strike Shows Need for Rank-and-File Rebellion Against Union Apparatus, by Tom Hull. AFSCME's betrayal of the 8-day Philadelphia city workers' strike once again exposes the union bureaucracy as an industrial police force for capitalism and its two political parties. It confirms an iron rule, with no exceptions. So long as workers remain under control of the apparatus, the only possible outcome is a sellout. The strike was a powerful expression of growing social opposition, pointing to an emerging confrontation between the working class and the Trump administration, which governs in the interests of the corporate oligarchy. It also demonstrated that building this movement is inseparable from the fight to overthrow the corrupt union apparatus and return control to the rank and file, where it belongs. An important step forward in this was taken Wednesday by the founding of the Philadelphia Workers' Rank and File Strike Committee, which calls on workers to reject the agreement, quote, override the decision to end the strike, which was taken in direct violation of the clear will of the rank and file and without any vote, end quote, and renew the strike, quote, immediately, expanded to include transit workers, white-collar employees, and all other sections of the working class in Philadelphia, end quote. The so-called agreement to end the strike is a complete betrayal. It includes a mere 9% wage increase over 3 years, just one percentage point higher than Democratic Mayor Sherelle Parker's initial offer. It makes no change to the residency requirement, forcing workers to remain in a city with a significantly higher cost of living. Worst of all, it paves the way for major cuts to welfare and healthcare funding, allowing the city to skip an estimated $13.5 million in payments to the health fund and committing AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, to collaborate on cost-cutting measures. The AFSCME bureaucracy shut down the strike in the middle of the night precisely because the strike was gaining momentum and strength. It had widespread support among the city's working class, while uncollected garbage continued to pile up in the streets. The strike disrupted the city's July 4 concert after top performers refused to cross the picket line. And on Thursday, 3,000 white-collar workers were set to vote on strike action, threatening AFSCME's efforts to block a united struggle. AFSCME is not even attempting to justify its position, but is instead trying to sow an atmosphere of defeat and frustration. District Council 33 President Greg Boulware told the press he ended the strike because, quote, we felt our clock was running out, end quote. By we, Boulware means the bureaucracy, which was running out of time to prevent the strike from spreading to white-collar workers and other sections of the working class. Throughout the strike, Mayor Parker slandered workers as vandals, used the courts to force sections of the strike back to work, and deployed police to the picket lines. As the strike continued, conditions were emerging for workers to defy injunctions, putting them in direct conflict with the Democratic Party. AFSCME President Lee Saunders, whose annual income is $400,000 and who was until recently a member of the Democratic National Committee, came to Philadelphia on Monday to deliver marching orders to the local union officials. His widely publicized resignation from the DNC last month, alongside American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten, was presented as a protest over the party's refusal to allow younger, more left-leaning candidates to run in the primaries. But Saunders' role in sabotaging the Philadelphia strike makes clear that his central concern is how to contain and suppress the growing and entirely justified anger toward the Democratic Party, a party of Wall Street and imperialism. The struggle in Philadelphia is taking place amidst a bipartisan social counter-revolution. At the federal level, Trump and the Republicans passed historic cuts to Medicaid and other social programs to partially fund trillions of dollars in tax cuts. The Democrats put up no real fight in Congress because they support the basic aim of his so-named Big Beautiful Bill. In Philadelphia and every major city across America, the Democrats are preparing massive cuts to school systems, transit networks, and other core functions which go far beyond another round of austerity. They represent the permanent dismantling of social infrastructure on which millions of workers rely. The working class is being bled white because American capitalism, racked by terminal crisis, is lashing out to find new sources of wealth, which can only come through robbery and violence on a massive scale. The lurch towards dictatorship expressed by Trump and the expanding drive towards World War III are the inevitable political expressions of this process. The conditions for a mass eruption of working class struggle are not only ripe, they're overripe. In the midst of the greatest attacks on the working class in living memory, however, the apparatus of the unions has only called 19 major strikes so far this year. That is, only when they did not think they could block a struggle outright. Every struggle raises the imperative for new, independent organizations of working class power. That is the purpose of the International Workers' Alliance of Rank and File Committees, the IWARFC. In initiating the IWARFC in 2021, the International Committee of the Fourth International wrote, quote, "New forms of independent, democratic, and militant rank-and-file organizations of workers in factories, schools, and workplaces on an international scale are needed. The working class is ready to fight, but it is shackled by reactionary bureaucratic organizations that suppress every expression of resistance." End quote. This necessity has been confirmed time and time again. In the 2021 Volvo truck strike, where workers repeatedly rejected a contract only to have it rammed through by the UAW, in the teacher struggles during the pandemic, where unions forced teachers back into unsafe classrooms, in the 2022 railroad contract fight, where the unions blocked a strike and allowed Congress to force through a contract that workers had rejected, in the 2023 UPS deal, hailed as a victory by the Teamsters while setting the stage for mass layoffs, and in countless other betrayals across every industry. The union apparatus functions not to unite workers, but to divide them, not to mobilize struggle, but to suppress it. Comprised of highly paid functionaries tied to the state and corporations, it exists to enforce labor discipline on behalf of capital. The experience of UAW President Sean Fain exposes the bankruptcy of all those who claim that the apparatus can be reformed. Fain's much-hyped stand-up strike was a fraud designed to prevent a real fight against the auto companies. It was then followed by mass layoffs. Fain has since embraced Trump's nationalist trade war agenda and was recently exposed as a corrupt thug in the latest report from the UAW Monitor. The Philadelphia betrayal must be studied carefully. It provides a strategic experience in the necessity for a rank-and-file rebellion against the apparatus. That rebellion begins with the formation of independent organizations of struggle controlled by the workers themselves. The struggle in Philadelphia is far from over, and the establishment of the Philadelphia Workers Rank-and-File Strike Committee points the way forward. Rank-and-file workers must insist that they have the sole right to decide the course of their struggle, not unaccountable officials earning six-figure salaries. The same basic issue confronts every section of the working class, in every industry and in every country. The IWARFC calls on workers to build rank-and-file committees in workplaces across the U.S. and internationally to link up their struggles and prepare a unified counteroffensive against the financial oligarchy and all of its political servants. Netanyahu orders Israeli military to build massive concentration camp inside Gaza, by Andre Damon. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has formally ordered the Israeli military to create plans for the building of a giant concentration camp on the ruins of Rafah, where the population of Gaza would be moved in preparation for their forcible expulsion, Haaretz reported on Wednesday. The Israeli newspaper reported Netanyahu made the order at a meeting of Israel's security cabinet on Saturday, before he left for Washington to meet with U.S. President Donald Trump. Only last week, Haaretz reported the existence of an internal briefing by the Israeli military that the, quote, concentration and movement of the population, end quote, is an official goal of Israel. In May, Netanyahu named the implementation of the Trump plan for ethnic cleansing as one of its official aims for the war. International human rights organizations have condemned the ethnic cleansing plan. According to Euromed Monitor, the camp would be, quote, built on the ruins of a destroyed city lacking even the most basic necessities of life. The zone will be placed under strict security control, with severe restrictions on movement, including a ban on exiting. This effectively constitutes the establishment of a closed mass concentration camp, where the population will be forcibly held outside of any legitimate legal framework, end quote. It added that the move, quote, is an organized act of genocide involving the deliberate imposition of life-threatening conditions aimed at the gradual destruction of the Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip through starvation, humiliation, mass detention, and forced subjugation, end quote. Last week, the Financial Times reported on a secret strategy document drawn up by the Boston Consulting Group, a major U.S. corporate consulting firm for relocating Palestinians from Gaza. In a front-page article Sunday, the newspaper revealed that the plan was created with the involvement of staffers of former UK Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair. Meanwhile, Reuters reported that the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, GHF, the US and Israeli-backed organization that delivers a trickle of aid, has drawn up a proposal for establishing camps, which it calls humanitarian transit areas, both inside and outside Gaza. The involvement in the U.S.-Israeli ethnic cleansing plan by the Boston Consulting Group, one of the largest corporate consultants in the world, has created a political crisis at one of the pillars of the global corporate establishment. On Thursday, Boston Consulting Group announced that two of its senior partners were resigning over their role in the project. Boston Consulting Group's chief risk officer, Adam Farber, and the head of its social impact practice, Rich Hutchinson, will be stepping down from their roles but will not be fired from the company. The firm is clearly attempting to limit the damage to its reputation by claiming its involvement in the scheme was the product of individual bad apples. The firm told Wall Street Journal, quote, "An independent investigation confirmed this was the result of individual misconduct coupled with failures in oversight and judgment," end quote. Boston Consulting Group CEO Christopher Schweitzer wrote in a letter obtained by the Journal, quote, "Even if this was not in any way, shape, or form a formal BCG project, our association with it is real, deeply troubling, and reputationally very damaging," end quote. In reality, the firm was clearly complicit in the planning of war crimes and crimes against humanity, putting its executives in legal jeopardy of prosecution. Meanwhile, Israel is continuing its daily massacres and mass starvation policies in Gaza. On Thursday, an Israeli strike on a clinic in central Gaza killed 10 children and 6 adults. The clinic, which was run by the humanitarian organization Project Hope, screens children for malnutrition and provides them with nutritional supplements. Project Hope said in a statement, quote, "Project Hope's health clinics are a place of refuge in Gaza where people bring their small children, women access pregnancy and postpartum care, people receive treatment for malnutrition and more. Yet this morning, innocent families were mercilessly attacked as they stood in line, waiting for the doors to open," end quote. Malnutrition is surging in Gaza, with over 5,000 children between 6 months and 5 years old diagnosed with acute malnutrition in May, according to UNICEF. Gaza's hospitals are on the verge of running out of fuel, with Reuters reporting Thursday that doctors are attempting to preserve scarce energy supplies by cramming multiple premature babies into single incubators. Dr. Munir Al-Borsh, Director General of the Gaza Ministry of Health, told Reuters, quote, "Premature babies are now in very critical condition," end quote. On Israel's blockade, "It is, quote, depriving these vulnerable people of their basic right to medical care, turning the hospital into a silent graveyard," end quote. You can find these articles and more at wsws.org.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.